April 26, 2011 on Gerwick.net. Steve Gerwick along with Adam Fairfax. And tonight we're going to analyze the 2011 WWE draft, both the main draft that occurred on WWE Monday Night Raw and the supplemental draft that took place earlier today on WWE.com. And right off the bat, Adam, we're going to give a kind of an overview, our thoughts, I guess, in general of what happened. But I think the first thing we should probably mention that if anybody lumbered through the supplemental portion of this draft, it was actually about 4.5 hours long. And I don't know, Adam, I've sat through a lot of WWE Raws, WWE SmackDowns, TNA Impacts, pay-per-views, and sometimes they really, really drag. But to sit through a 4.5 hours worth of live chat on WWE.com today was a little bit painful. And I guess the main problem you have is there's like no rules for this draft. So you have Howard Finkel sitting there letting us know that no end in sight. We've got more picks coming. And like they were saying on Gerwig.net today, you know, how many people are going to get drafted? There's like no set ground rules. And you just had pick after pick after pick. And, you know, today is usually the supplemental portion is usually the jabroni draft. But today, Adam, they were like drafting everybody.
Yeah, we saw some big names go, and there was quite a bit. We were looking over offline before we got started here about some drafts from previous years, and there's been some big ones with you know, upwards of 60 superstars getting drafted. But there were some big ones, and usually for the last several years, the supplemental draft has always been, you know, lower to mid-card guys, some guys that you haven't seen on TV for a while. But there were a few big name guys that were drafted today. Just 4.5 hours. I can't imagine. I was lucky, I guess. I was a little bit busy at work. I checked in to Gerwig.net a few times just to see the updates, but just 4.5 hours. I can't imagine. I don't envy you there.
Yeah, it was it was pretty painful to get through, but we of course provided pick-by-pick results as it happened in pretty much real time. I guess the one thing I wanted to talk about up front is probably the format of the draft. And it was kind of funny, Adam and I were talking offline, and he had pretty much the same idea I thought of during the day. They could really spread the WWE annual draft out into 2 days. You could do like part A on Raw Live and then part B on SmackDown. A scenario that I thought of was announce up front how many picks you're going to have total and then just divide it in half. Say there's going to be 12 or 14 picks for the entire draft and then have 6 or 7 picks on Raw and have six or seven picks on SmackDown. I guess the problem with that, Adam, is the way it's currently formatted with television, specifically WWE, is that Raw is live every Monday night and SmackDown is taped on Tuesday nights. So obviously the second half or the second portion of the draft would sneak out in spoilers. But I just think it would be a better way to see the second-tier draft, such as like a Daniel Bryan, to see what kind of reaction he might get. Today Sheamus got drafted, the U.S. champion. I think they kind of deserve, to some degree, to be drafted on television so that their drafting or their selection kind of means something in the big scope of things.
Yeah, absolutely. It would certainly have more of an impact. And it's like we said earlier, you know, why can't WWE go ahead and do a live broadcast for SmackDown on a Friday night? They've certainly got the money to do it. And also, you know, SmackDown has kind of, you know, at times been the forgotten brand. You know, the blue guys over there on Sci-Fi on Friday nights, it would certainly pop a rating for them to extend the draft over, you know, 2 days to have it, the first part take part on Raw and the second half take part on SmackDown. So I certainly think that would be a good idea. I don't know. I don't understand why they don't do that. You know, the Raw, the big draft is always hyped on Raw. It's always a big show. It's always, you know, a ratings grabber. So So I don't understand why they wouldn't pop the ratings on SmackDown and go ahead and do that and have it live. If you're worried about spoilers sneaking out, then go ahead and have SmackDown be live that week and you know, have people tune in. You know, they could have done, you know, of course this is something that we're going to get into, but the whole John Cena angle, excuse me, with him being drafted to SmackDown and then back to Raw, they could have left Raw could have gone off the air and we could have thought, oh my goodness, John Cena is going to SmackDown. But then of course we'd have part B on SmackDown on Friday night and we see that John Cena is in fact you know, going back to Raw. So I think it would make perfect sense, but there's a lot of things that I would think would make perfect sense to Vince McMahon and company and they don't do it. So I don't know.
Yeah, we'll get into the, you said the John Cena angle. I'm going to call it the John Cena debacle because, boy, we got some reaction to that move by WWE to actually draft John Cena to SmackDown on the first pick of the show, and then at the end of the show, John Cena got drafted back to Raw. But we'll talk about that as the podcast progresses. But one of the things I also wanted to mention up front, Adam, is I want to kind of analyze the way they do the draft, and in particular, Raw and SmackDown both have different general managers, and I kind of wanted to compare it to, and I know, it, you know, it's sports entertainment, it's not real professional sports, but kind of compare the role of a general manager to the role of a general manager, say, in the NFL. An NFL general manager is in charge of acquiring the talent, either trading for talent, drafting talent, signing talent as free agents. And in this scenario, the general managers really have no power in terms of acquiring talent. We were bringing up offline that, you know, in 2004, Triple H was selected from Raw to SmackDown and then turned around. He was traded back to Raw for Booker T and the Dudley Boys. But the general managers currently in professional wrestling, and particularly, of course, on Raw and SmackDown, they don't have that decision-making authority, and they have really no decision-making when it comes to the draft itself. This is a draft lottery, so it's like it's almost like ping pong balls. You know, they like ping pong balls in a hopper. They just come up, and whoever it is, that's who it is. And just to me, it seems kind of backwards that really the general managers have no decision-making power. That really they're only there to, you know, officiate maybe specific matches that's going on a show, or maybe make stipulations for a pay-per-view. But in the big scheme of things, Adam, they don't have decision-making power in terms of personnel with the rosters they are in charge of.
No, they don't. And, I mean, honestly, on Raw, we've got a mystery GM. We don't even know who it is. I mean, can you imagine something like that flying, if you will, in professional sports anywhere else? I mean, we've really outgrown the need for a general manager. When the initial concept for this draft started, if you go all the way back to, what was it, 02, at least
yes.
That was?
Yep.
Yeah, 02. You had Vince McMahon and Ric Flair, who were both, and I use quotations as I say this, 50 owners of World Wrestling Entertainment, meaning Vince McMahon owned 50% and the Nature Boy, Ric Flair owned 50%, and they were feuding, you know, and Vince says, okay, I'm going to control SmackDown, and you're going to control Raw, and we're going to split the roster in between, and you take your guys, and I'll take my guys. You know, so there was a direction at that point in time for not only the draft, but also for the characters of the general manager. You know, and we've seen Paul Heyman and Stephanie McMahon and Eric Bischoff and all these guys come through, but at this point in time, you know, they have no real power at all. And you know, like you say, this is basically, you know, a lottery. It's kind of like the old Royal Rumble drawing where, you know, me and Gene would, you know, stand there and the guys would pick their number. I mean, there's really no need for a general manager at this point in time. And for the fact that there's not even a Raw general manager, not only in storyline on television, but I don't think behind the scenes they have any idea where they're going with that. So, I mean, honestly, I really don't see the need for a general manager. We were talking about maybe having a commissioner, someone who oversees, you know, everything for both brands. But the fact that, you know, general managers kind of don't really mean anything anymore is just, you know, I just don't see the necessity of even having them.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I kind of think back to the one draft where Eric Bischoff was drafting along with Paul Heyman, and I kind of remember Vince saying, you know, we're going to do this draft tonight, and then you have until midnight tonight. If you don't like the roster you have or don't like the talent you've acquired, you guys can make trades, and then you guys can work things out, and you can make a trade that will be announced on the website, and boom, there you go. You guys are in charge, and if things don't go right, I hold you responsible. You know, you're 50%. It's kind of like Vince owns WWE, and he puts Adam in charge of Raw, and he puts me in charge of SmackDown, and I want to have, for my 50% of WWE, I want it to be the best roster I can acquire. And if I think there's a wrestler on Adam's side on Raw that I think I could utilize, maybe I call Adam up and say, Adam, why don't you trade me so-and-so, and I'll give you so-and-so. Or we negotiate a trade, or there's a diva that I think I could do something with, or a tag team I think I can do something with, or maybe I can go to developmental. I can go down to Florida Championship Wrestling and make a move. But right now, unfortunately, they can't do that, Adam.
No, they can't. And, I mean, you know, truthfully, 90% of the shows are dedicated to 10% of the roster. So there are so many guys that are just kind of floating around that, you know, it could do some good, and it could, you know, bring them to television. It could get more exposure for them if things were taken a little bit more seriously when it comes to the GMs and them, you know, deciding on trades throughout the year. It should be something that if we're going to take this brand extension, exactly. We don't, you know, stars don't appear maybe every once in a while, you know, and especially leading up to WrestleMania. You know, I've heard it said that, you know, pretty much forget about the brand extension in the month leading up to WrestleMania because guys are going to come and go, you know, from both shows. And I can understand that, but I think that if you stick to this brand extension and you take things a little bit more seriously and you give these younger guys who have been off TV. I mean, there were a few guys that were picked in the supplemental draft that haven't even been on TV in the last several months. So, you know, I think that there's an opportunity for some of the younger guys on the roster who don't have the exposure that they need to get over with the audience. There's an opportunity, and it's a missed opportunity right now, and it's a shame because, you know, they've got some very talented guys on their roster, and we were just talking offline, you know, that it seems that, you know, these guys have a very short shelf life, and the WWE gives up on guys very quickly, and if you're not over in an initial, you know, time, when you're first brought on the TV, then, you know, it's probably not going to happen for you. They've got their factory down in Florida, and they just, you know, produce a lot of the same, you know, carbon copy cutout kind of guys. And if you don't get over in that initial run, then chances are you're not going to be around for very long. And, you know, I see that this time of year we always have a lot of roster cuts. And to me, if you go back and you look at prior drafts, a lot of times there's been some guys that were drafted in the supplemental draft that hadn't been on TV for a while, and you scratch your head about it, and you know, you might see them pop up on a Raw and have a three to five minute match, and then all of a sudden they're cut. So I think the axe is out, and it's being sharpened right now, and it doesn't look good.
And I'm going to get Adam's opinion on this too, and then we'll get into the we'll go pick by pick and give our analysis of the pick. But another thing, Adam, that I believe they did this in 07 and 08. The draft itself was in June. And I think the problem currently, they do these drafts at the end of April when you've seen a lot of the same talent go from show to show. Now, obviously, with the WrestleMania build, it makes sense to do that. You saw Del Rio on Raw, you know, leading up to WrestleMania. But when they do the draft a couple weeks after WrestleMania, it doesn't seem like any big deal for Del Rio to go to Raw because I've just seen him how many times on Raw now. Whereas if we wait to June, then if I'm only really watching Raw and suddenly Del Rio is drafted to Raw, wow, suddenly, yeah, it's a little bit of difference, a new face coming to freshen things up. But the way they do it now in April, only, you know, 3 or 4 weeks after WrestleMania, these guys we've already seen on both brands. So it doesn't seem like it's anything special to me.
No, it really isn't, and I think that they just, you know, the draft, if used properly, you know, it can build towards new feuds and it can build towards new matches for SummerSlam. I mean, you know, for the better part of the, you know, since WrestleMania's inception and the inception of SummerSlam and the, you know, the pay-per-view era, SummerSlam's always been up there as the number two pay-per-view in World Wrestling Entertainment. So I guess the idea of the draft can be to freshen the brands, to freshen some feuds, to get, you know, some different stars on different shows and build programs towards SummerSlam. But the fact that they do it in April, I don't know. I think that the WrestleMania this year just kind of fell flat. We've talked about that, you know, several times now. And I think that they were just kind of grasping at straws. You know, they talked about possibly, I think, you know, we were talking about maybe the week that the Rock was going to be there and they had to get it in. They wanted to get it in before that. And I just think that they were grasping for straws and they wanted to try and pop the ratings, as it is always, you know, traditionally a ratings grabber, the draft edition of Raw. And I think that they just, you know, someone made the comment about the, you know, Monday Night Raw last night being booked on the fly, and I can't help but feel that that is a true sentiment. I think that that they just are grasping for straws right now, and they wanted to pop their ratings, so they went ahead and did it now.
Not to mention, for this particular draft, this was the go-home edition for Extreme Rules, and it was kind of, you know, they did the angle with Cole and JR and King, but I mean, this was the draw. This was the draft. They could have easily held the draft off for a few more weeks. Like I said, I think it's better to hold it off till June. You've had some time where you've seen guys, you know, change shows already. Wait till June, do the draft, and then kind of set up SummerSlam, as you said. That would kind of be the mid-year change in you know, Vince McMahon saying we're gonna shake things up. That'd be the time to shake it up. Is probably in the middle of June. To me, it would make a little more sense. Now, another thing, Adam, and we'll get to the draft picks in a second. I just got one more thing I wanted to throw in here. One thing I don't like about the way WWE does their draft specifically is that they have a match where they have a Raw guy against a SmackDown guy. And if the SmackDown guy wins, SmackDown gets a draft pick. Now, in theory, if I'm on SmackDown and Adam's on Raw, why would I want to pin Adam? Because if I win, I get somebody from the Raw side, which obviously is usually perceived to be the stronger side, show up on SmackDown. I mean, to me, I want to go for the world title per se. I mean, everybody should really want to be the world champion. So why would I want Randy Orton to switch from Raw to SmackDown? Or on the flip side, why do I want somebody from SmackDown to go to Raw? So I just, this is, again, goes back to, why don't you let a general manager make the draft picks? Why do I want a big name talent show up on the show that I'm currently working for when that's another roadblock for me to get to the world championship?
That absolutely makes sense to me. And I think that, I don't know if that's where that suspension of disbelief is supposed to come in, but yeah, that absolutely makes sense. Especially if you're a lower or mid card talent.
Right.
You know, why do you want a Randy Orton to come over? You're absolutely right. That makes sense. And again, it comes into play with the general managers that they should be the ones that are making these picks. And they're the ones who are trying to build their roster for their show to have the best show that they possibly can. So that absolutely makes sense. But I don't know. In a way, I'm glad that the general managers didn't pick it, because I don't want to hear someone reading from the Raw laptop. You know, for the majority of the evening. But yes, it makes perfect sense. I don't understand it either, and I don't know what their rationale behind that is, but to be honest with you, I don't think that they've even thought of that. You know, if you talk about the lack of you know, attention to detail when it comes to the World Wrestling Entertainment and its programming today, I think that they probably haven't even thought about that.
Yeah, it just goes back to, you know, back in the day, if you're NWA or your Crockett days or WWF, if somebody got hurt, that was an opportunity for you to step into that spot. Or if somebody was leaving the roster or leaving the promotion, yeah, you don't want somebody to step into that spot. You want to achieve that spot. So that's just one of those things I've had a problem with the way they conduct the draft in WWE. And I guess looking back, I guess I have a lot of problems with the way they do the draft. But let's get into the draft. This is the 2011 draft. Let's start with the Raw portion. They actually started out with a Battle Royal, and I was under the idea that the winning side would get two draft picks, the winning either Raw or SmackDown, depending on who won the Battle Royal, but it ended up the SmackDown side won. I guess they wanted to start out with a bang at him, and the very first pick on the draft board was John Cena.
Superman himself.
And then they went with, for the first pick for Raw, actually, I guess the second pick would have been Randy Orton, but we'll kind of bounce around. We're not going to go in the exact same draft order. But the first pick on the Raw side was Rey Mysterio, and it kind of tips your hand when I saw Rey Mysterio go to Raw. I definitely expected Sin Cara to go to SmackDown.
Yeah, I think so. I think that it's too soon for a Sin Cara and a Rey Mysterio feud, and also Rey Mysterio has, you know, reportedly been in the doghouse recently. So in a way, that's kind of a surprise that he went to Raw to begin with. He's pretty much consistently been on SmackDown, I think, for his entire run in WWE, if I'm not mistaken.
You know, I believe that might be the case.
Yeah, I know that he's appeared on Raw just like everyone else has bounced from show to show, but yeah, I mean, he's predominantly been
a SmackDown guy.
Yeah, I mean, more so than anybody, Rey Mysterio has been the face of SmackDown. So for him to go to Raw, you know, I don't know. I don't know if he'll go to Raw, and hopefully he's going to go to Raw and be pushed, in, you know, at the main event level and you know, have a chance, an opportunity to do well on Raw. But I don't know. I mean, he has been, like we've said, he's been in the doghouse. And you know, the SmackDown brand has always—it's always been on, you know, broadcast television. It hasn't been on cable, and it always had a very high Latino demographic. So I think that was the reason that you know, Rey Mysterio had always been that face of SmackDown, was because of that—the high Latino demographic. And I think that maybe they want to start phasing Ray out. It could go one of two ways. They can start phasing him out, and, you know, eventually they'll cut ties, or they want to bring him over to Raw and throw him into the main event scene. But a lot of people are excited about Mystico, Sin Cara being in WWE. I work with a lot of Latino, you know, people. I've got a lot of friends, and they're all very excited. You know, they know that I'm a big wrestling fan, and I talk Lucha Libre with them a lot. And, you know, we talk about all the stuff in Mexico and everything that's going on in Mexico. We don't talk about WWE or TNA. They're not really familiar with it. But when they first made that, they played that first promo for Sin Cara, I went to work the next day, and they were all talking about it. Everybody was very excited about Mystico. So I think that there's always been that strong Latino influence on SmackDown with Rey Mysterio there. So if Rey Mysterio is on his way out, then he needed to be replaced on SmackDown. So that's why they put Sin Cara over there. But I don't know. I would like to see Rey. I know he doesn't have a lot of years left in him, but I would like to see him do well on Raw. I don't think he needs to be a champion, a world champion or a WWE champion, but I'd like to see him do well on that side of things and end his career on a high note, but it's WWE, so it's hard to say.
Yeah, I agree with you. I've always been a Rey Mysterio fan myself, and I echo your sentiment there. And then this is kind of where you kind of smelt something was up. What the WWE was cooking probably wasn't going to be something you're going to like, because the second pick for SmackDown, they got Randy Orton. So already it's like the alarm clock or the signal is going off that all of a sudden, you know, when they're trying to bring, you know, a top babyface to the SmackDown side, all of a sudden they ended up with John Cena and Randy Orton with the very first two picks. So you kind of knew something was up, that obviously they're not going to move Cena and Orton over to SmackDown. And I know you had the idea, or somebody suggested to you, that why not just draft the whole Monday night as a result, and then, you know, we could move the whole SmackDown side to Raw and from Raw to SmackDown.
Yeah, honestly, I mean, if they really wanted to shake things up and they really wanted to stick it to all the cynics and the critics on the internet, why not have SmackDown come out and say, we select Monday nights? You know, yeah. Monday nights are wrestling night. Of course, it's Monday Night Raw, but people tune into USA to see WWE wrestling. So if they really wanted to shake things up, I mean, you know, we talked about it offline, and of course, we both agreed that it would never happen, but... You know, if you really wanted to give SmackDown the rub, then all you'd have to do is change the ring ropes and, you know, the graphics, and you'd have SmackDown on Monday night. So it's an idea. I don't think they'd ever go for it, but,
no.
You know.
I don't think Bonnie Hammer would be a big fan of that one. So
Probably not.
They pay a few nickels to have the flagship show Raw on Monday night, but it is an idea. And then we had the Big Show was drafted from SmackDown to Raw at the same time. I believe it was either last Friday or the Friday night before he won the tag titles with Kane. So I guess they always seem to like to do this. They split up the tag team champions. So and of course, you know, tag team wrestling don't mean much anyways in WWE. But Big Show changes sides, and it seems to me, Adam, that the Big Show changes sides a lot.
He does. It seems like every year he bounces back and forth from one show to another, and it seems like every few months we see him in another meaningless tag team. You know, at this point in time, I don't know what you do with the Big Show as a character. I think something needs to be done with him. I mean, obviously the guy, number one, I think the biggest thing about Big Show that you gotta give him credit for is his passion for this business. You know, the guy stands over 7 feet tall. Anyways, you know, reportedly 500 pounds. I don't know how much his shoot weight is, but to be that size and to go out on the road and to be, you know, in the rental cars and in the hotel rooms and in the plane seats, you know, they're not designed for a man who's 7 foot tall and weighs 500 pounds. And I know that he took that break there for a while. He was off for, you know, about a year, I think. But you really got to hand it to the guy. He's got a passion for this business, for him to go out there and be on the road, you know, so much. And you know, if you think about it, Big Show's been around. He's been going pretty much nonstop for the better part of 20 years, you know, almost. So, you know, maybe I'm getting away from me a little bit there. But it's been about 15 years. 96, I think, is when he came in and made his debut. So 15 years. The guy's been, you know, he's been dealing with accommodations that weren't made for a man of his size. So, you know, for his passion and then, of course, the talent that he brings to the table, you know, he doesn't throw drop kicks anymore like he did in his WCW days. But the guy, he still has a wealth of talent and then, of course, knowledge as well. They've got to do something with this guy. I don't know what you can do with him. Of course, when Vince Sr., Andre the Giant out of World Wrestling Entertainment or Worldwide Wrestling Federation as it was known then. Andre got to go from territory to territory to territory, so he was always an attraction and he was always fresh. The Big Show doesn't have that that advantage because, you know, there's only WWE and he can go from Raw or SmackDown to SmackDown to Raw. And, I mean, really honestly, at the end of the day, they're pretty much the same thing, so... Something's got to be done with this guy. I don't know what else they can do with him at this point in time, but, hey, WWE doesn't pay me, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars to come up with ideas for their talent. So I expect them to be able to do that themselves. So they've got to do something with Big Show. Otherwise, him moving to Raw doesn't really mean a whole lot. You know, who are we going to see him in a tag team with next?
Yeah, you know, I think they did know, they talked to the Big Show and, they did note that the tag team champions can go from brand to brand, so I guess you'll probably still see, you know, another thing. They're going to be trading this guy from show to show because he will defend the titles on both shows. So you will see the Big Show pop up on SmackDown, I guess, until, you know, they decide to take the titles off him, which could be at any time because nobody really holds the titles for very long.
Well, exactly, and who do they even have to defend the titles against? I mean, really, the Usos were both traded to SmackDown in the supplemental draft, which we'll get to. But yeah. I mean, really, honestly, what's the need for a tag team championship in the WWE at this point? There's no one for them to defend them against, and it doesn't really mean anything. And you know, it's just a sad shape of tag team wrestling in WWE today.
Yeah, I guess to paraphrase The Rock, it doesn't matter who your tag team champions are because you don't have a tag team division anyways. But I get off the topic anyways. But next up we had Alberto Del Rio. I guess that was probably one of the bigger names. And obviously this sets up something for SummerSlam. I guess a little bit of a spoiler alert here. You may want to fast forward a couple minutes here if you don't want to hear this. But the direction they're currently going, Adam, the main event for SummerSlam is currently John Cena versus Alberto Del Rio. So I guess it makes sense for both guys to be on the same brand.
Yeah, it does. And to me, this is more important than the debacle surrounding John Cena and Randy Orton as well. I think Alberto Del Rio is a great heel. I'm a very big fan of his. I think that he's got a lot of potential, we'll say. He hasn't necessarily lived up to that potential, but they haven't necessarily put him in positions for him to live up to that potential. And I don't think a feud with John Cena is going to do anything for him either. Do we really see Alberto Del Rio going over on John Cena? You know, is anybody going to go over on John Cena, really? You know?
Yeah.
So I think it's good. I'm happy to see him on Raw because he'll get more exposure. And like I say, I think he's great. I think he's a wonderful heel. He's kind of a throwback to the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, that kind of, arrogant gimmick. But, to throw him in a feud with John Cena, that's probably going to go nowhere. But I am happy to see him on Raw. Probably the biggest, the biggest pick for me of the night.
Now, before we get to the John Cena debacle, there was one other pick. There was Mark Henry moved to SmackDown, and I don't know if it was on the comment board on Gerwick.net, and we had a lot of comments. If you didn't get a chance, go back to the Raw recap, and also go back to the WWE supplemental draft report and look under the comments. There's a lot of comments made. I don't remember if it was on one of the comments boards or if it was on Twitter, but somebody pointed out that it seems like Big Show, The Great Khali, and Mark Henry, they seem like they are drafted like every single year. So it was no surprise Mark Henry, how this guy is still on the roster, I have no idea, but he is now officially back on SmackDown.
Yeah, I don't know why Mark Henry's still there. If you think back, he got signed to that 10-year contract. I think it was in 96. So in 2006, it should have been the end of sexual chocolate. But here we are, 5 years later, and he's still with the company. I don't understand it. But I think they could do some funny segments. They could have Mark Henry show up on SmackDown, and you could do some funny stuff with Ezekiel Jackson. Maybe they could be long lost brothers, or I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do with Mark Henry. He turned heel as well, which he wasn't really over as a face. So,
oh boy.
Yeah.
I think you said the Big Show signed with WWE in 96. I think he was on WCW because he was part of the NWO in the later 90s. I think was he 99 or 98 or 99? He jumped to WWE, and I remember that 10-year contract was like $1 million per something along those lines. So yeah, they definitely invested a lot of money with that Big Show, and of course he goes from show to show, and then he takes a break, or he comes back and he's a boxer or wants to be a boxer. Who knows? But that was the portion of Raw. But wait a minute. One more pick for Raw. And John Cena is drafted back to Monday Night Raw. So he was on SmackDown for, about an hour and 45 minutes. And I really... I don't even know the description here. I don't know what the adjective to use, but I was very disappointed with what I saw, because there was some people on Twitter that were sending to me. They're like, they're gonna move John Cena back to Raw, and I'm thinking, no, let's think a little more positively. And all of a sudden, John Cena is back on Monday Night Raw. Go figure.
Yeah, right. Just a waste of time. A waste of time. A waste of energy. It means absolutely nothing. I I don't know. I think, you know, it's been said, I've heard people say that, you know, just think of John Cena as the Hulk Hogan of this generation. Well, I gotta make a point about that, and here goes. Hogan was the John Cena of the 80s, and, you know, he was the Superman and the face of WWF, or WWE, or whatever you want to call it, but he was the face of the company, and he was all about, you know, saying your prayers and taking your vitamins, and he was the ultimate good guy. And then the 90s rolled around, and Hogan kind of just fell flat. You know, he got old, he got stale, people got tired of it. And you know, to his advantage, I guess, back then, that, you know, you could jump ship, you could go over to WCW or vice versa and kind of, you know, have a completely new environment. It was a true, you know, that was when there were two true brands, you know, and you could see guys go back and forth. But, you know, Hogan went to WCW, and he was still kind of stale then. So, you know what they did? They turned him heel, and it was huge. It was the biggest thing ever. No one ever thought Hogan was going to turn heel, and he came out and he told the fans to stick it. He said the prayers and the vitamins and training and doing the right thing was all for the money. I did it for the money. Now people say, well, you know, don't ever expect to see John Cena turn heel. Well, that, my friend, is what John Cena needs. I would love, absolutely love, to see John Cena come out and turn heel. If you want to surprise me and you want to do something right, you know, have John Cena come out and turn heel. But instead, you know, they'd rather give us what they give us, and you know, the Superman comes out and he's unstoppable, and I don't misinterpret me. I think John Cena is a great talent. I think he's a company man. He's good for business. His heart is professional wrestling. That's 100% true. He's got a passion for professional wrestling, but I'm telling you, you know, people say it's 50-50 as far as, you know, the reaction that he gets, but I think it's starting to, you know, lean a bit more in favor of negative, and I think they got to do something with him soon. They got to give him a heel turn or something. I don't think it would have mattered if he legitimately had gone to SmackDown and was going to stay on SmackDown. It wouldn't have mattered. He would have been stale on SmackDown. So for this, you know, for WWE to think, you know, if anyone, whoever came up with this idea, thought, man, we're going to swerve them tonight, if that's honestly what they thought, and I can't imagine them thinking anything else, they need to be relieved of their duties, you know, immediately, because that's, you know, it was no swerve that anyone was excited about. No one, I don't think, and, you know, anyone over the age of 12 could have said, oh, man, you got me there. So, I don't know. What do you think?
It's a Vince Russo moment. It's they want to swerve you, you know, and like right off the bat, first pick, John Cena to SmackDown, and then you're thinking, wow, and then all of a sudden, Randy Orton's going to SmackDown, and you're thinking, wow, I mean, they're serious. They're really going to shake things up here. And then at the end, you know, I really, really don't like that you can be drafted several times. It's pointless to me. I mean, once you're, I mean, the money, I always go back to NFL, but the first pick in the draft, whoever it is, like 1 year it was Jamarcus Russell. I know it's a bad comparison, but Jamarcus Russell was the first pick of the draft for the Raiders. Now all of a sudden, you know, the seventh pick, whoever has it, Cincinnati Bengals, can't say, oh, we want Jamarcus Russell, put him on our board. I mean, it's just asinine the way they did that, and it just left a really bad taste in my mouth. And again, it kind of makes it look like SmackDown is definitely the B show, that they're not going to send, you know, to use the analogy you use, this Hulk Hogan of the modern age. You're not going to shift him to SmackDown. But I guess the argument would be, at the end of the night, Adam, they still did move Randy Orton over. So at the end of Monday Night Raw, I guess probably the big storylines here is that Randy Orton is in Edge's spot as a top babyface, and then they moved Alberto Del Rio off SmackDown, who is a good heel, and suddenly, the way I'm looking at it, is SmackDown's heel side looks pretty weak.
I agree, and how much better of a feud could it have been? I mean, what, you know, as far as in the ring and the match is concerned between Randy Orton and Alberto Del Rio, if John Cena is this generation's Hulk Hogan, and Randy Orton has to be this generation's Randy Savage. You know, we've seen Orton on SmackDown before. I mean, obviously, he's the number two guy in the company, and you know, they move him back over there. And like I said, we've seen it before, and there is a lack of heels. And you know, I think we would have gotten a much better feud out of Randy Orton and Alberto Del Rio than with John Cena. But they've got to continuously feed these guys to John Cena. In order for this machine to work, they have to continuously feed heels, you know, to John Cena. That's the way that the machine works. And I guess that's just their reasoning there. And they've got to have a baby face to replace Edge. To be honest with you, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw Randy Orton go over to SmackDown and then turn heel, you know, because there are such a lack of heels on SmackDown. But then who's going to be your top baby face? Is it going to be Kane? You know, it just, if Randy Orton stays baby face, who's he going to feud with? Wade Barrett in the core? So he's going to go from one feud with CM Punk and the New Nexus to a feud with Wade Barrett in the core. I mean, it's going to be the same thing that we just saw on Raw. And nothing against Wade Barrett. I think he's great. I think that's been well documented on our podcast. But he's certainly no CM Punk. So I don't know. I don't know where you go from here. I mean, you know, the idea for the draft in the first place is to shake things up and create new feuds and you know, I don't know. I don't know where Randy Orton goes from here. It's a shame.
Yep. So that was the Monday Night Raw draft. And then today, Tuesday afternoon, they started the supplemental draft on WWE's website. And I'm not going to go through every single pick. Maybe we'll just do a handful here and there. But the first pick that was selected was Daniel Bryan. And, of course, I think we've kind of documented our feelings on Daniel Bryan as a talent. But I don't know. He moves from Raw to SmackDown, and I have a feeling, Adam, if he doesn't really click on the SmackDown brand, this could be the end for Daniel Bryan.
It could. I don't know who he feuds with. I think, we had just gotten the Cody Rhodes and Rey Mysterio thing. I think maybe the natural feud to start out with would be Daniel Bryan and Cody Rhodes. They're both around the same size. In a lot of ways, they're pretty similar. I know I catch a lot of flack from Ring of Honor fans by comparing Daniel Bryan and Cody Rhodes, but I think that might be the natural feud that you put him in to begin with. And then, you know, I don't know. It's going to be hard to say. I think that's a very, very strong possibility that if Daniel Bryan doesn't, connect or click or what, you know, get over, however you want to phrase it, that, you know, we could see the continued downgrade of him, and he's not as valuable to the company as maybe they thought he could be. So it's hard to say. It's a shame because, you know, like we've said time and time again, Daniel Bryan, a fantastic talent. And I think that, truthfully, honestly, he's a lot more entertaining as a personality than anyone would give him credit for.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And real quickly, I want to backtrack a little bit. At the end of the night as well on Raw, with Alberto Del Rio moving to Monday Night Raw, and of course Del Rio is getting the title shot for the World Championship on Extreme Rules against Christian, you'd have to think they kind of tipped their hand as well, that Christian probably wins the title and obviously stays on SmackDown, and the WWE Championship obviously stays on Raw. At least that was the that's kind of the idea I had coming out of Monday Night Raw.
Well, I could certainly see that playing out, but then again, at the same time, Christian has always been, everyone's always waiting for him and ready for him to take that step, you know, to the next level. I don't know if we're going to see it or not, honestly. I mean, it makes perfect sense, but then again, this is WWE and it's Christian, so I wouldn't be surprised if Del Rio... I wouldn't be surprised if Del Rio wins the world title, goes to Raw, and then we see John Cena win the WWE title at Extreme Rules, and then we have, you know, Del Rio versus Cena title for title at SummerSlam, maybe. I mean, you know, I don't want to see that, but I wouldn't be surprised, you know, when the unfortunate passing of Eddie Guerrero, of course, we saw Rey Mysterio receive his big push into the world title I mean, you know, I don't want to compare Edge's retirement to the unfortunate, untimely passing of Eddie Guerrero, but Edge is forced to retire now, and you've got Christian here, so maybe they will give Christian the strap as a nod to Edge, but I'm not sold on it. I wouldn't bet money on anything in professional wrestling, but I certainly, if I did, I wouldn't be putting money on this.
Yeah, it's amazing there was a gambling line that was taking bets for WrestleMania, but you know, if you want to do that, all power to you. But I guess in your scenario, if Del Rio would win the world championship at Extreme Rules and he takes the title to Raw, then SmackDown has no champion.
Yeah, and we've seen that happen before. That's
true.
Happened before,
true.
And we've also seen it on the flip side as well. If you remember back to when Brock Lesnar was the undisputed WWE champion, I believe Stephanie McMahon was the GM for SmackDown at the time, and she signed Brock Lesnar exclusively to SmackDown. So then the WWE in turn needed to create a title for Raw, so they brought back the world title. If you remember in the very beginning of this draft, the world championship, the undisputed WWE championship, we'll say, and the world tag team championships could be defended on either show. And then I think they eventually, or actually maybe not even the tag team championships, maybe it was exclusive to Raw, because then we got those SmackDown tag team championships, the old blue belts. They kind of have that blue tint to them, blue purplish tint to them. So we saw different titles, be created for different brands, whereas maybe the Intercontinental title was on Raw, SmackDown needed that second title, so they created the U.S. title. So I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if, my goodness, who knows? I wouldn't be surprised if Alberto Del Rio wins the title and takes over to Raw. I would be surprised if, however, SmackDown is left without a championship and they revive the AWA world title to be defended on SmackDown. That would surprise me.
Yeah, that would be a curveball for sure. The 10th pick in the supplemental draft, the second pick overall, was Jack Swagger, was moved from SmackDown to Raw. I don't know, Adam, this was a guy a couple of years ago I thought really they had something with him, and I know the biggest knock against him, of course, was his lisp. He doesn't speak real clearly. But, again, a guy with great in-ring ability. I don't know. How do you see him shaking things up on Monday Night Raw?
Well, the greatest wrestler in my mind and in a lot of people's minds of all time, the Nature Boy Ric Flair, has got a pretty pretty noticeable lisp as well. So I don't think that should be anything that holds Jack Swagger back. It's not a big surprise to see him drafted to Raw, because he's been appearing on Raw for the last, I don't know, however long this program with Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler has been going on. You know, for the most part, he's been appearing ever since. So, excuse me, I'm not really surprised it's going to move to SmackDown. I think Jack Swagger's got a lot of potential. So, I don't know. I think this could, it could end in a good big way for Jack Swagger. But at the same time, he's one of those guys that has been on the verge of that main event spot for quite a while now. So, I wouldn't be surprised too if this isn't, one last ditch effort, to really get him over at the same time. So I don't know. I'm a fan of Jack Swagger. I like the guy. I don't mind
his
list.
Me too. I definitely agree. I like him as well. And then we'll get a couple of picks here. We had the great Khali. I think I mentioned before, it seems like he's in every draft. He was selected again, number 11. Back to SmackDown, we had at 12 and at 22, we had Jay and Jimmy Uso. They got drafted to SmackDown. As you said, one of the few tag teams they actually have currently active in WWE. And then at 13 was Kelly Kelly, and I guess she could be one of those dolls that Amazing Kong is attacking in those vignettes. So
Karma.
Officially she's now Karma. So I know you can always use the catchphrase there. Karma is a, but I don't know. So you got Usos, Great Khali, and Kelly Kelly. Anybody stick out in that group?
No, I mean, Kelly Kelly, I think, is, for obvious reasons, she stands out. But otherwise, no, I wouldn't be surprised to see you know, any one of the three, at least the male competitors there. I wouldn't be surprised to see any of those guys released in the near future. I think Kali, you've done pretty much everything you can with the guy. You know, he's very limited in what he can do physically, and, you know, his mic skills are pretty terrible as well. So, you know, what can you do with a guy that hasn't already been done?
I agree. 14, 15, and 16, we had JTG, you know, formerly of Crime Time. He was selected by Raw. You had Alicia Fox move from SmackDown, or from Raw to SmackDown, and I was trying to think, well, was she really on Raw? But she moves over to the SmackDown side, and William Regal moves from Raw to SmackDown. So you got JTG, Alicia Fox, and William Regal. Anybody there that sticks out to you?
William Regal, of course. You know, it's good to see that he's still around. You know, I don't think that there's a whole lot left for him to do at this point in his career, but you know, he can be a good mid-level, mid-card heel on SmackDown, so I think that he'll get more of an opportunity to have television time on SmackDown than on Raw. I wasn't even aware that he was on Raw. Again, one of those guys that we haven't really seen that much of lately, but, you know, William Regal, you know, came up the hard way, you know, and he's a great talent, and seems like maybe going to be one of those guys who makes a career out of being with WWE, which, you know, could change at any moment, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him start to wind down his career and then transition into an agent and have more of a backstage role. So maybe one last hurrah for William Regal over here on SmackDown, and then, you know, say maybe obviously do something with William Regal and Wade Barrett, just both with their, you know, their European descent, their English descent. I don't know. Wade Barrett's from England. Is that right?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah.
And, of course, they could be managed by Sir Michael Cole.
Yeah, yeah, of course, yeah.
17, he had Tatsu, was drafted to SmackDown. Drew McIntyre moves to Raw, and Natalya moves to SmackDown. Anybody stick out in that group?
Well, Drew McIntyre, of course, you know, they seemed pretty high on him when they first brought him in. And I think that maybe he even started out on Raw. I don't know. I mean, I know that he's been back and forth. But, you know, they seemed pretty high on the guy. And then he kind of, you know, faded out for a little while there. And I think he had an IC title run. I think that he is possibly someone that, you know, could make some sort of impact in the future. You know, Vince McMahon is always high on those Irish. You know, those Irish gimmicks and whatnot. So, I don't know. I think Drew McIntyre could have a bright future, but at the same time, he could be one of those guys that are on the fence. Who were the other two?
Tatsu and Natalya.
Okay, Tatsu. Yoshi Tatsu, you know, honestly, I see him being cut very, very soon. I don't really even know what he's doing there. I wasn't really familiar with the guy before he was signed with with WWE. I keep up a little bit with what goes on in Japan, and he wasn't someone that I was necessarily familiar with. And I really hate to say, you know, I don't want to play up on any Japanese stereotypes or whatnot, but I really think a great Buddha type gimmick could get over with fans today, especially because it is a more, you know, a family friendly product, and it heals, I think, especially if you're going in a family-friendly orientation, they got to have some kind of gimmick. So, you know, I wouldn't mind to see them take him off TV for a little while and then have him come back in that great Muda-style gimmick. So, I don't know. There's definitely potential there, but I don't see them doing anything with him. And Natalya she's a hard-nosed, you know, she's kind of like a little pug, like a little bulldog, and you know, always a hard foundation. So I hope that she does well. I don't know. I don't know. She definitely doesn't have, you know, all of the assets that, you know, a lot of the divas do. She's a wrestler. She's a woman's wrestler. You know, she's a very beautiful woman. Don't get me wrong, but, you know, she's built like a wrestler. She's obviously the daughter of, Jim Neidhart, and that shows a little bit. So I wish her the best. I hope that she does really well and has great success.
Yeah, when she got drafted, it reminded me of last year's draft. Because remember, last year's draft, they moved the Bulldog son, D.H. Smith, and Tyson Kidd, along with Natalya, the Newhart Foundation, from SmackDown to Raw. And there was a lot of hopes that, you know, Adam, they would give them a push. And they did for a while. And as you said, kind of per usual WWE, they push somebody, they kind of lose faith in them, and they just kind of scrap them to the side.
Yeah, they do, and I mean, you know, I would have loved to see at the end, you know, maybe they hold off on the John Cena thing more, or John Cena is, you know, he's drafted over he's drafted back to Raw, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, have D.H. Smith come out and just destroy John Cena. I don't understand why. I've heard so many people say, you know, that D.H. Smith or Harry Smith, whatever you want to call him, is such a talented guy. I've heard that from so many wrestlers. I just heard Hulk Hogan say somewhere that, you know, talking about as far as talented guys up north go, that Harry Smith was at the top of the list. So I don't understand. He's got a great look. I don't understand why he has never really been able to take it to the next level in WWE, because, you know, I think the guy's got the total package. So I don't know. Tyson Kidd is, he's not on the bigger end of the spectrum as far as size is concerned. I mean, obviously, and I think that plays a factor in, you know, his role. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think that the new Hart Foundation or the Hart Dynasty or whatever you wanted to call them, I think it was a great idea, but they just didn't have a whole lot of direction for him. And partly because there is, you know, really no tag team division. So it's a shame, a waste of talent, because all three of those guys I liked a lot. And I hated their music, though, I got to say. I love that classic, you know, guitar riff that was Bret Hart's intro for so many years. But then they kind of did an updated remix, and I got to say it was horrible. I hated their music, but great talent.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I hated that music, especially, you know, I guess, you know, we grew up watching the Hitman and watching Hitman team up with Neidhart back in the day, and they'd have that great theme music, and now today's version of their theme music is not all that great, to say the least. But we move on in the draft. We got 20 and 21 back-to-back. Raw picked up Curt Hawkins and Chris Masters. I would think both probably won't last very long on the Raw side.
No, I think these are two guys that are probably going to be done. I was never a fan of Chris Masters his first go around. I never understood why they brought him back. So to me, you know, I think that he's on his way out the door. He's got to be. I don't know why. You know, that's fine if you're, you know, raking in the money. That's great. But to waste any money at all on Chris Masters is, you know, beyond me. And Hawkins, as far as Curt Hawkins is concerned, those guys came in as the Major Brothers or something like that. From the beginning, from the very beginning, they just seemed like a very bland. If you remember back to the early 90s in WCW, there was a tag team of twins. I think they were called the Cole Twins. It was Keith and Kent Cole or something like that. Two very generic twin brothers tag team. They had blonde kind of mullet buzz cuts. They really reminded me of those guys, and they tried to push them back then, and it didn't work, and it's not working now. And, you know, Curt Hawkins, unfortunately, seems like he got the short end of the stick. At least the other one gets to do his woo-woo-woo or whatever and pump his fist. So, short of the stick for Hawkins, but in the grand scheme of things, you know, who knows? Maybe he can go down to Ohio Valley Wrestling with Domino and, you know, Mike Mondo and all those guys and, you know, have a decent career, not make much money, but, you know, do something that's worthwhile.
Let me give myself a cheap plug here. When I saw Curt Hawkins, of course, earlier today I talked to Lance Hoyt, former WWE superstar Vance Archer, and of course they teamed up for a short time in the short stint that Vance Archer had in WWE with ECW and SmackDown. So if you haven't checked out the interview I did with Lance Hoyt, Vance Archer, definitely check out Gerwick.net for a very interesting interview. So I want to give a cheap
plug there. Check out all the interviews, too, by the way. I mean, go ahead and plug the others. You know, you got what do we got up there right now? One with Chuck Palumbo. You got Johnny the Bull, Stamboli, Relic. You've got Rob Conway, Cherry, Dutch Mantel. There are a lot of great interviews.
Yeah.
You know, and they're really, it's a really personable approach that, that, you know, the interviews take. And it's really almost like, you know, you're as a listener, you can sit down and you're talking with Dutch Mantel or Rob Conway and some very interesting things to say. So I would recommend that anyone check those out. The Rob Conway one, especially, I found pretty interesting. So I definitely recommend those to anyone.
Yeah. Rob Conway has a great mind and a great voice. You go back and listen to that interview. I mean, he could be definitely an announcer. And I don't know if I got
Absolutely.
Too many words. I don't know if I got too many words in the Dutch Mantel interview, but it's archived and you can definitely check. Obviously, Dutch has a great mind for wrestling. He's been in professional wrestling for a long time. Booked in Puerto Rico. Booked for TNA. So definitely do check out the archives up at Gerwick.net. If you go to audio at the top, there's a little scroll down. You can click on View All to see the archives, and you can also subscribe if you're an iTunes user. And whenever a new iPod or interview's up from Gerwick.net, you can definitely check that out. So another way to check out our podcast, and we would appreciate if you do so. Getting back to the draft, let's go back to pick 23, and I think this was probably one of the more interesting picks of the entire draft. Because a guy who I'm very high on, I think has a bright future if they give him that right push. At 23, Raw picked up Kofi Kingston.
Yeah, Kofi Kingston definitely has the talent to get things done in the ring, and I've made the comparison before that he's kind of like a Shelton Benjamin type wrestler. You know, I don't know what he can do. I mean, he's got so much potential, but it just seems like, you know, he'll get a push, his initial push on Raw, where, you know, he had that great match with Randy Orton at Madison Square Garden. You know, the guy just seems like he's bound for greatness, you know, bound for glory. But he seems like he's right at that level where he's going to take the next step, and then for some reason he doesn't. And I don't know. I mean, that's a can of worms that I don't want to get into. I don't know if it's a race issue. The same thing with Shelton Benjamin. I don't know what it is with WWE, but it seems like both these guys are right at that level where, you know, they're ready to take the next step into the main event picture, the main event scene, and it just doesn't happen for them. So I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised to see Kofi Kingston, you know, involved in some kind of feud with whatever secondary title is going to be on Raw, and that be that. I mean, honestly, I don't see him, you know, breaking through that glass ceiling anytime soon. And that's unfortunate because, you know, like I say, I think the guy is super talented. And I'm glad he dropped that fake Jamaican accent, too.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think he's got a world of talent. I wish him the best. But don't say bound for glory. You're going to jinx him. He's going to end up in TNA. So I like to see him stay on Raw. So so Kofi Kingston is now a part of the Raw brand. And then at pick 24, talk about a guy going absolutely nowhere, Adam. Ted DiBiase Jr. is back. Oh, actually, he was moved to the officially moved to the SmackDown roster. So Ted DiBiase Jr., you know, he's got, you know, he's the million-dollar man's son, but career going absolutely nowhere.
Yeah, another guy who's got everything going for him. Second, actually, I mean, he's a third-generation guy.
Right.
His grandparents were were in the wrestling business. So he's another guy that's got everything going for him, but for just some reason can't quite seem to make it, you know, to that next level. So I don't know. I don't know if it's a lack of faith in the writing staff and the creative to get behind Ted DiBiase. I don't know. I don't know what it is, because I think the guy's got a world of potential. He's got a couple brothers that one's roaming around the independent scene. I believe Mike DiBiase, he was the NWA North American champion for a while, and he's got some younger brothers down in developmental. So,
yeah, Brett.
Brett. And yep. I believe there's another younger brother who maybe has just recently signed or they are somewhat interested in. But, you know, to me, I don't know. I don't know where the guy's going. There's a total lack of direction. I think that they need to get him. They need to, number one, establish him as either a heel or a face. You know, I know that he's predominantly been a heel, but if that's the case, then he needs to really establish himself as a heel. There's too much. There's too many shades of gray. Again, we go back to that comparison of, you know, the 1980s WWE product to today's product and the comparisons and things, but you know, back then a heel was a heel was a heel and a face was a face. So I think that if he's going to be a heel, he really needs to establish himself as a heel, and I kind of see him in the same position as Kofi Kingston over on Raw. I see him feuding for, you know, whatever secondary title is on SmackDown, and of course, I mean, I believe Wade's still the Intercontinental Champion over there on SmackDown.
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, I think he's got to immediately drop that title and move up to the main event picture and give these guys, you know, Ted DiBiase and guys like that, give them an opportunity to have a championship, you know, to strive for.
Yeah, we're going to find out here at the end about another secondary title moving over, but we'll get there. 25 was Tyson Kidd. I think we pretty much covered him. At 26 was Tamina. She moves to the SmackDown side. Of course, she's been involved with Kozlov and Santino Marella. I don't know if they're going to push her at all on SmackDown. And at 27, Raw picked up Tyler Reeks. Again, a couple of picks. I you know, you can switch them around, but I don't see them doing much with either one of those individuals.
No, I don't think so either. I wouldn't have Tyler. Been on TV. I haven't seen him in quite a while. And,
Superstars.
And, yeah. I don't think it mattered when he was on TV. He kind of reminds me of, who was the guy that had the towel gimmick? His gimmick was the rally towel or whatever. You know, we can't remember who he was, you know. So he's,
there's your point.
He's going nowhere fast. Yeah. Yeah, well, there you go.
There you go. Can't remember his name. You're going absolutely nowhere. And what was that? Talking Heads on a Road to Nowhere. That's what some of these people seem.
Yeah. New Superstar Initiative. That's all we got to say about him. The New Superstar Initiative. You know.
Yeah.
Brandon Walker.
There you go. Who was Chris Harris in TNA.
Absolutely.
Yep. 28, Alex Riley. I guess he's going to be taken away from the WWE champion, The Miz. He's been drafted to SmackDown. And at 29, Raw picked up Beth Phoenix. You kind of think maybe Beth Phoenix to feud with Karma.
I think that's obviously where they're going to go with that. I wish they would have held off for a little while. I would have rather seen Karma come out and you know, obviously she's going to start dominating, I think, and just blowing through the Divas, as she should. She should be an unstoppable heel, an unstoppable monster. And I think they should have kept Beth Phoenix away from her for a while. That could be a big-time women's match for, say, WrestleMania 28. I know it'd be strange to book a match a year in advance, but
I'm looking at the
entire card, let's have a women's match that's not filler, that's not a Playboy Bunny evening gown match or a, you know, a Jersey Shore reality match. Let's have, you know, a women's match that means something, you know. And I think that had they kept Beth Phoenix over on SmackDown and kept them apart for a while, it could have been something that they teased throughout the year. What would happen if the Glamazon, you know, came over to Raw and challenged, you know, Karma? So I hope that they do keep them apart. I don't see how it's going to be possible now that they're going to be on the same show. But that's kind of a disappointment.
You know, I don't know. Karma, the promos, I believe, have aired on Raw and SmackDown, correct?
Maybe so then, yeah, I guess so.
So who knows? Maybe they'll put Karma on SmackDown. You never know. I mean, this is creative. They book on the fly, so.
This is true.
It could go down that way. We'll see. Because actually, she's not officially debuted on either show as we record this on a Tuesday night, so. We'll just have to wait and see where they send her. And any thoughts on Alex Riley being broken away from The Miz?
I think it's the death knell or the death toll or whatever you want to say for his future, more than likely. I mean, just kind of a faceless, you know, sidekick. I kind of lost faith and hope in sidekicks when they released Lance Cade a few years back when he started hanging around Chris Jericho. You know,
rest
I don't
peace.
Think he's going anywhere anytime soon. So, you know,
yeah.
I think doesn't matter. No, not really. Who are they going to get the Miz now? Maybe the Big Show coming back over to Raw will, you know, will rejoin up with the Miz. Who knows?
Well, speaking of sidekicks, now that Del Rio moves to Raw, Brodus Clay is still on SmackDown, so I guess he's fighting the same. He's fighting the same boat. Maybe they can have the battle of the sidekicks with Brodus and Alex Riley. Who knows? I mean, just a thought to throw out.
There
and then
go.
lastly, Adam, the last pick, 4 hours and 30 minutes in the supplemental draft, we find out that the other secondary title is also going to the SmackDown side, because they have the IC champion Wade Barrett, that Sheamus has been moved from Raw to SmackDown.
They ended it pretty big. That's a bigger pick. It's kind of scary to see the U.S. title go over to SmackDown, because, like we say, I wouldn't be surprised if Alberto Del Rio takes the world title and goes over to Raw. I mean, they've, you know, neglected SmackDown for so many years. It's been the B show. I wouldn't be surprised if it had the Intercontinental and the U.S. title as its main championships, and the world title and the WWE title are over on Raw. I mean, as crazy as that sounds, it wouldn't surprise me. So I don't know. I don't know what to make of that. They've got to somehow find a way to get one of those secondary championships back over to Raw. I don't know who. Do these guys have opponents that they're scheduled to face this Sunday? Wade Barrett and Sheamus, I mean.
I can't think of a match, because we have Rey Mysterio against Cody Rhodes. We have both world title matches are on the line. We have the King and JR against Cole and Swagger. I don't believe there is a match for the secondary titles.
You know, it's that just blows my mind. As you run down the matches for this pay-per-view coming up, that none of them mean anything. And I mean, a lot of them are just filler. You know, I mean, obviously a match that would make perfect sense to me would be you've got Sheamus, who's the U.S. champion on SmackDown now, and you've got Wade Barrett, who's the Intercontinental champion on SmackDown now. I say have a battle of these, you know, two secondary championships, have Sheamus and Wade Barrett have a match, and whoever wins gets to keep their title and represent that title on SmackDown, and then the loser, you know, that title goes back to Raw or however, you know, however you do it. And those two would have a great match, I think. I don't know how at this point you get one of the secondary championships back to Raw. So that just makes me think that, you know, it could be a possibility that we see the world title, at least for the time being, but it wouldn't surprise me to see the world title and the WWE title both on Raw heading into SummerSlam.
Well,
I know that sounds crazy, but I think it's a possibility.
Here's the curveball, and I believe if you watch Monday Night Raw this week, of course they plug that next week it's the biggest birthday party in, what, pro wrestling history? Oh, not pro wrestling or whatever, you know, sports entertainment. But The Rock's going to be, it's his birthday next weekend, or next Monday in Miami. I believe they said, and I could be wrong, but I believe they said that all members of both rosters are invited to Raw on Monday night. So it's a very possible scenario that if Sheamus is leaving Raw to go to SmackDown, that Sheamus loses the title to, say, a Kofi Kingston, and Kofi Kingston's on the Raw brand with the U.S. Championship.
That could be a possibility, and the sad thing about that is that if all members of the roster are going to be on Raw on Monday night, then that means that you're going to have more wrestlers on Raw than ever before, but they're probably going to have even less wrestling than ever before. I'm all for The Rock coming back, but this is going to be, I don't think, to me, you know, it's not going to be the greatest show. They show the Rock This Is Your Life segment with Mick Foley and The Rock so many times, and I can remember just flipping over to Nitro when I was watching that. It was boring to me. I know that they show it over and over and over again, and I think it's kind of, become one of those, nostalgic moments, and it's over for nostalgic reasons, but I can't see this Raw being a very good show. But I think it's a very good possibility that maybe we'll see one of those titles. It surprises me, really, that the U.S. Championship is over on Raw, because the U.S. title was always a NWA Championship. It was always a WCW Championship. So to have the U.S. title on Raw, which is their flagship show, over the Intercontinental Championship, which has always been a WWE creation, really surprises me. So I wouldn't be surprised to see somehow the Intercontinental title come back over to Raw, but hopefully they do something. Hopefully something like that happens. I don't know. Maybe you have one of these, one of these new younger talents, have an opportunity to take Sheamus out. I mean, that could mean a lot for somebody to get a win over Sheamus on one of the biggest Raws of the year. To bring the title back to Raw, it could be a big thing, but, we've seen WWE's track records when it comes to executing, big things.
A couple of final notes. The Raw edition, or the draft edition of Raw, ended up doing a 3.5 rating, 5.2 million viewers. Kind of strange that actually the first hour did better than the second hour, 3.51 the first hour. Second hour did a 3.43. And then also I wanted to note as well, at the end of the draft, no members of the core or no members of Nexus were drafted. So I guess going forward, Adam, both they must have plans for both groups to, Nexus on Raw and the core on SmackDown, because they didn't split either one of those guys up, either team up.
I don't know that they have plans for, either teams. I think they have no plans for either teams. I don't think they know what to do with, with each stable. So to split them up, all of a sudden you have two groups of, four or five, six guys. You split them up, then all of a sudden you've got eight, nine, ten guys, single stars. I think that's just too overwhelming for them. So I think that, they just decided that we're going to leave these guys be, and we'll keep you here, and we'll keep you here, and that be that. I think that it would have been, way too much for them to split them up.
And finally, too, this draft was really precipitated in SmackDown's direction because Edge retired, so they obviously had to bring a bigger name from Raw to SmackDown. I mean, so many years now we've seen the draft usually favors Raw, but this year for a change, I think in the final analysis, SmackDown did better, and they had to because obviously you it's hard to replace Edge. I'm not sure Randy Orton can do it. He's going to be the top babyface now on the SmackDown brand, so he's got, if he wants to be that main event level babyface, he'll get his opportunity on SmackDown, and I guess we'll see where they go with Randy Orton on SmackDown.
Yeah, SmackDown I think definitely is the place for Randy Orton to be. He's always going to be end up playing second fiddle to John Cena as long as he's on Raw. I mean, obviously we saw John Cena's not going anywhere. They can tease all they want, but he's going to stay on Raw and be the face of the flagship show. So, really, the only place for Randy Orton is on SmackDown. And Edge is a hard guy to replace because Edge can be a super over baby face, but he can also be a very, very effective heel. So it definitely does seem that things favored SmackDown in this year's draft. I hope that they stick to the brand extension. I hope that, that they take some of these guys that have been off TV and some of these younger guys and really help try and elevate them. You've got a nice mix on both brands, veterans and younger, up-and-coming talent. So hopefully they can create some new feuds and spark some interest in some of these guys that, that we've been told we should care about but don't necessarily do. So you know, I want to say that, you know, a lot of times maybe we come off as negative, you know, but that's not necessarily the case. Of course, I mean, I want to see WWE succeed. I want to see them do well. On the opposite end of the spectrum, I want to see TNA do well. I want to see professional wrestling as a whole do well. When wrestling's hot, you know, nationally on the cable shows, you know, when we go through the periods, the big time, the, you know, when wrestling's on fire, then, you know, it's a trickle-down effect. The independents get bigger. There's more. There's, you know, it's just a domino effect of positive things. So I really hope that, you know, them changing some things up like this can be maybe the spark that, you know, ignites WWE's fire. I hope that they do, you know, succeed at this. But you know, it's a long shot. It's a gamble. It's WWE that we're talking about here, and you know, I don't know. They really need to elevate new stars, and I hope that that's what, you know, that's what comes out of this thing.
Those are our thoughts on the 2011 WWE draft, both the main draft on Raw and the supplemental draft that took place on Tuesday afternoon. You can definitely leave your feedback up on Gerwick.net, a couple of places, and there's been a hotbed, of course. The supplemental draft results has gotten like 50 or 60 comments last time I looked, and definitely check out the Raw recap, which has also had a lot of people chiming in during the show and then after the show to give their thoughts and opinions on what went down on Raw Monday night in terms of the draft. And, of course, we do have a complete recap of all the draft picks. If you want to go through and analyze it for yourself, you can check out a file called Complete 2011 WWE Draft, a post on Gerwick.net, and it's also going to be up on the top stories section as well. So it'll be up there for probably a day or two. You can check it out, give us your thoughts on the draft, and of course we have a couple polls that go along with the draft. And I also encourage you to go on Gerwick.net and check out the WWE roster section at the very top of the page. Obviously, the roster looks drastically different after 30 draft picks, so I guess the only time will tell how everything will play out, but it should be interesting, Adam, and we gave our thoughts and opinions, and I don't know. Were we too negative tonight?
I don't know that we were too negative. I think that you have to, you know, truly get into things and analyze things. And, you know, from our perspectives, you know, Steve, we both are kind of in the same boat. We've been watching wrestling for so long. You know, a lot of people say, you know, you're too down on WWE and all this kind of stuff. And it is what it is, and you should just be happy and accept it and watch it. And it's entertainment and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And yeah, that's true to an extent, but you also got to remember that professional wrestling has been around for a lot longer than, you know, Vince McMahon. So, you know, for us to be critical of things and to be negative about certain things, we're negative because we want to see them do things, you know, that excite us. And, you know, we all are wrestling fans, and we want to be able to suspend that disbelief, and we want to be able to, you know, to be entertained by something, and we want to see things done the right way. And so many times, you know, people make so many mistakes, but, you know, it's not any different for any other sport. You can't watch any other, you know, I live in the Columbus, Ohio area, and after every single Ohio State football game, you can't turn on any local sports talk radio show, and they're criticizing this, or they're talking about this, or analyzing that. And, you know, of course, some things are going to be negative, but that's just the way that it goes. You know, you want to see something succeed, and of course you've got your own opinion. So, you know, at the end of the day, like I said, I want to see things succeed. I want to see the WWE do well. I want to see them, you know, ignite that flame and reach, you know, ascend to where they once were. You know, wrestling's kind of fallen flat in the last few years, and everyone always says that it's a cyclical, I can't say the word, but, you know, a cyclical kind of thing. It cycles. It runs in cycles. We'll go there. All right. So this has been a down cycle, and, you know, people say, well, it'll pick back up. It'll pick back up. It'll pick back up. And, you know, we're just kind of, as fans, we want to see it pick back up. We want to see them do well. And hopefully, you know, they're making decisions and they're heading in the right direction to do so. But I also do want to say, you know, leave your comments for us as well. If you check out these podcasts, there is the comment box for us too. Leave your comments for us. you know, I'd love to be able to get into reader comments and opinions. And, you know, if you have any ideas or topics that you want us to discuss as well, you know, go ahead and leave that up there too. Very interactive at Gerwick.net. And that's a good thing about the website, is that you're always able to interact with other wrestling fans and give your opinion, both negative or positive, on what not only what's going on in the world of professional wrestling, but also on podcasts, on Steve's interviews. I don't know. What do you think? Do you think it was too negative?
Well, you know, we were up the top. You know, we were very critical of the format, I think. I think the format definitely, moving forward, needs some revision to it. Like I said, the concept of they have a match, it's Raw versus SmackDown, and the guy wins so that he gets a draft pick for his show. I just, I've always kind of had a funny feeling that this doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And again, going back to the general manager, I think the general manager should definitely have more influence on who is on their roster. Obviously, they're figureheads anyways, but on the shows, make it look like they have decision-making power. Look like, you know, they want to make a selection. They really want Randy Orton on their show. Or say they really want Tyler Reeks on the show. They can come out and say, this is a guy I have a lot of faith in. I want to move him over. So there's just, you know, the way they format it. And, of course, as I said, I like to see them move the draft itself to June, as they have done a couple of years, 07 and 08. So, yeah, maybe I'm a little negative on it, but I think those are critical thought on it, and it's constructive criticism. You know, they don't have to take my opinions, of course, they usually don't, but I want to throw it out there. And, of course, we podcast here, give our opinions, and that's my thought. I don't think, you know, if people want to say we're too negative. And I know, you know, some of the podcasts we did with the state of TNA, some people thought we were real negative on TNA, but you know, it's just they have so much potential. Same thing with WWE. They do have potential. I think the roster right now is very weak on both sides. I think you can take 30 guys and mix and match them, but at the same time, it's still the same roster. You know, you just mix and match, you know, guys on Raw and SmackDown. So the big thing for WWE, I think, to get another boom is to find a new character, a new storyline that really clicks. And right now, I'm not seeing anything on Raw or SmackDown or on TNA that seems to be really clicking. So and that's what we need in wrestling. We need a Stone Cold. We need an NWO. And right now, I just don't currently see it.
Absolutely. And I think that you need to find that mix between family-friendly entertainment and then also be able to draw in your older fans. You know, I don't think that we need the Vince Russo era. You know, in the Vince Russo era, John Cena wouldn't have been drafted back to Raw. He would have been drafted to SmackDown and then decided that he was going to have a sex change operation at the same time. You know, we don't need that. But at the same time, you know, we don't need the complete direction for the, you know, the family-friendly thing. There needs to be a nice, comfortable medium there. And I think it's possible. I think it's attainable. And at the end of the day, I think it comes down to presenting wrestling as an entertaining sport and not sports entertainment. But, of course, that's another topic for another time. But, yeah, you know, of course, I mean, you know, like I said, we're wrestling fans. We're analyzing these things. And you know, we are going to be negative about things at times. We're going to be positive about things at times. And, you know, there's a lot to be positive about in WWE right now. Of course, you know, we always talk about Christian and how, you know, he's, you know, a great star that could be a breakout star if they just used him in the right way. And that's absolutely true. I mean, Christian is a throwback to the 1980s heel, the Tully Blanchard, the Ric Flair. You know, I mean, there are a lot of positives in wrestling right now, but there needs to be, like you say, that Stone Cold Steve Austin, that NWO, that Hulk Hogan, the Superman of wrestling turning heel. There's got to be something that catches us, you know. Behind every great wrestling angle has been a little bit of shock and a little bit of reality, and that's the mix that they need. So, I don't know. Too critical? Maybe so. But, hey, what are you going to do?
And those are opinions. And the sex change operation, please don't forward that idea to Vince Russo. Please don't. But, Adam, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
And that's our thoughts on the WWE draft. You can leave your opinions and definitely check out all the news and all the new podcasts and interviews at Gerwick.com. gerweck.net, GERWECK.net.